don't remember what I was like, Sarah.
Don't listen to nobody trying to tell you who you are.
We were in love once, years ago, and then we weren't, not for a long time. But we're better now. Please don't walk away. Not now.
Harrison Ford. A Mike Nichols film. Regarding Henry.
Fordcast podcast, a Harrison Ford podcast, where we just start over.
No, we're gonna get
damn it. Hey, that's not fair. Last time we got to start over when you messed up.
Did we?
I
don't remember.
But now that's a bit. So, but that's right. You hate banter.
No, I love banter. I hate puns. I hate like witty, like stupid things.
No, you
I like banter.
Said that were you just making fun of me then when you said that?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Lauren does not get. Sorry, guys. This is going to be a weird one because I'm just getting my voice back.
And we haven't been in the same room for like a month.
Yeah. If you listen to, it's going to be after this, but there's a Hard Bodies episode mm-hmm. that we did.
Which is your other podcast.
Which is my other podcast that I literally, like, you can hear my voice start off a little stronger. And by the end, I had to, like, you know when you're sick, or not sick, like mine was just my voice went out. Because I don't take care of myself. But you, like, when you don't have a voice, so you literally go, bah, 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 and, like, you have to, like, take a deep breath to get your voice to come out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was by the end. So Hannah would just talk, 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 and I couldn't respond to her because I had no voice. So I'd be like, and then she'd pause, and I'd be like, okay, and, like, deep breathe to, like, respond to her comments.
So what is the topic of that episode? When should people keep an eye out for?
Oh, that's Leonardo DiCaprio. That's when we did the second Great Gatsby episode.
Gotcha.
We did two Great Gatsby episodes because we did Robert Redford because Hannah wanted to. She's like, well, what movie do you want to watch? Mm. And I was like, we could either watch Great Gatsby or The Way We Were. And so she was like, oh, let's do Gatsby. Or I think we both were like, let's just do Gatsby and we can, like, touch on The Way We Were. And so then my suggestion was, well, why don't we just do Leo? In that episode, I realized why I find Leo attractive in that movie. And it's because they literally made him look like Chris Pine. His hair is blonder. He has triangle eyebrows. And his eyes are, like, they digitally made his eyes bluer. So I was like, oh, cool. It just, like, knock off Chris Pine.
You know, I just realized, though, I really do appreciate Robert Redford because I was like, But I realize I'm actually more of a think a Paul Newman fan because all of my Robert Redford movies are with Paul Newman.
So like
I haven't seen The Way Butch We Were yet.
Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yes, The Sting.
That you and Hannah just need to talk because the only two movies I think I had ever seen Robert Redford in were The Way We Were and Gatsby. My mom loves Redford, but my mom is one of those people who doesn't like rewatching movies.
Yeah, I don't. So get it
was and like I was lucky with Harrison Ford because my brother loves rewatching movies. So every Harrison Ford movie, he was like, oh, cool. Well, I'll watch it with you.
And you,
and my mom's not that way.
You talked about in the show that Harrison turned down the prequel to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid playing the Paul Newman
part?
No, the Redford part. I just realized I was saying their names backwards.
What a joy.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those weekends.
Yeah.
And we're recording two shows, so this will be interesting.
This will be interesting. I don't know if I'm sick or what I am, but...
So, and I think I have a cold. So again, hi, welcome to the Fordcast podcast where Harrison Ford.
New York sucks right now,
it's 27 degrees in New York
City. And it was 60 earlier this week, so yes. Everybody is sick.
Because global warming doesn't exist.
It's like snowing in London or in England somewhere. Like full on, like 8 feet of snow.
Well, technically, I guess winter is just coming to an end.
Winter is coming.
That's next week.
What?
Sean Bean.
Oh, bye, bye, bye. I didn't even
see. I'm a little quick. So yeah, in 2 weeks we'll be doing Patriot Games, but today we're doing Regarding Henry from 1991, written by J.J. Abrams.
Uh huh.
Although at the time it was Jeffrey Abrams. That was weird. He's billed as Jeffrey Abrams for a couple of movies, actually. I think it's not till Armageddon that he is credited as J.J. Abrams. Don't know
what
why.
What was he? Sorry, I missed that. What was he?
Jeffrey.
His name is Jeffrey?
That's what one of the J stands for, yes.
I just thought he was J.J. Guys, J.J. Abrams and I have a interesting relationship with one another.
You want to remind people who maybe are not listening to every one of our podcasts?
Oh, about when we met him or about my relationship with JJ?
Your relationship. We don't have to talk about when we met him.
When I was in... Well, I remember my brother, like, as a kid, there's, like, certain things I remember. And I remember the first girl my brother was in love with was Carrie Russell and Felicity until she cut her hair off. So that is a J.J. Abrams show that I didn't realize until I got older. But in high school, I was obsessed with Lost. Like, crazy obsessed with Lost. So I was always, like, down for everything J.J. Abrams did. And then he rebooted Star Trek so that he could end up directing Star Wars. It's, like, very famous that this man legit only did Star Trek so that he could eventually do Star Wars. Because he wasn't ever really a Star Trek fan, which my brother was.
He's pissed. More of a Star Wars guy.
Yeah, as I'm sitting in a Star Trek shirt. But, yeah, and so I loved that because that obviously gave me my boy. And I love Zachary Quinto because, you know, Pittsburgh people stick together. But then he did my Star Wars and he killed off my boy.
Lasai.
But, yeah.
So JJ
was... We have an interesting relationship.
So JJ was 23 years old and this was his first screenplay.
What am I doing with my life?
I know, right? He pitched the idea to Scott Rudin, very famous producer. Who does theater and film, at a party. And he says that he wrote regarding Henry in 7 days.
I mean, you can tell. I don't really like regarding Henry that much.
The critics didn't seem to like it, but I think it has a nostalgia for people. I didn't like it as much as I remembered liking it, but I think it's a sweet movie.
It's fine. I feel like that's me with any 90s movie. I'm like, it's fine.
Well, that's something I think we should definitely talk about. This feels like such a 90s movie. The music feels, it's by, the music's Hans Zimmer, who's also a very famous.
Anytime you like music in any movie,
it's Hans Zimmer.
It's gonna be Hans Zimmer. Yeah. Didn't he do Star Trek? Or was that
Probably.
No, the new one, I think, was the guy from Lost. Michael Giacchino Probably. Or whatever his name
is. See, I'm from the same hometown as Mark Shaiman, and he always jokes that he loses Oscars to Hans Zimmer.
Like, yeah, everyone does. Remember Inception?
Yeah, it's really good for Oscar pools. Just if you see, oh, Hans Zimmer, just click him. Or John Williams, I guess, but.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but Hans Williams. I think.
Hans Williams?
Oh, my God.
Great.
Hans Zimmer, I think, has more. I haven't checked. Because I'm mostly, we're going to talk about the actors.
I love John Williams, but also all of his stuff ends up sounding very similar to me.
Yeah, but it's still beautiful.
Four years, I could not separate the Superman theme from, like, Indiana. Like, I couldn't separate it from anything. They all morphed in my head as
one. But any artist, any musician, there's going to be...
Oh, yeah, no.
I mean, I can point at... If I know a movie composer pretty well, I can be like, oh, I think this is Mark Shaiman. Oh, I think this is, like, Hans Zimmer. Or this sounds like John Williams. Like, if I know them pretty well, I can usually, like, pick out their motifs. And I'm not necessarily a music person, I would say.
Oh, I am, but it's just... As an adult, I can, but as a kid, all of those sounds to me, I was like, oh, this all sounds the exact same.
I guess it's kind of like...
Except for Harry Potter. Harry Potter was like the one that I was like, and maybe that's because that was my thing, mm-hmm. But I was like...
But you know it better.
Yeah, but still, like, to me, Harry Potter is still the one that is completely separate.
Well, I feel like...
From all of the others.
I feel like to me, it's like, I love Aaron Sorkin, and Aaron Sorkin repeats a lot. A lot.
Everyone
Themes,
does.
Words. That's, you know, that's his motif, I guess, in a way. And I'm fine with it because I like it. I like it.
And yeah, Nolan's the same way. Very I love talented. Christopher Nolan, going back to Hans Zimmer. But he is the same way. It's like, and JJ is the same. Remember the lens flares?
Well, thank God he's done with the lens
flares.
He's
done with the lens flares, but for a while, you could literally spot a J.J. Abrams movie from a mile away.
I think now we can call that his lens flare period.
I just like that every time he talks about Star Trek, he's like, what did I do?
Well, I love the fact that it was his wife who was like, you need to stop.
Because literally, Into Darkness was insane. Star Trek was bad, but Into Darkness had a lot, too.
I haven't seen it yet.
What, Into Darkness?
No, I know. It's on my list.
Okay. Side note, guys, because we are talking about Abrams. Into Darkness, everyone knew that they whitewashed Khan. It was very, like, everyone knew that that's what was happening. Mm-hmm. Because Ricardo Montalban played Khan in the original, and he is not a pasty white British dude. Yet Benedict Cumberbatch was up there, and we were all like, all right, he's Khan. They're like, no, his name's John Harrison. No, he was Khan, and he was Khan in the movie, but no one bothered to, like, just straight out say it. And if he was John, great. Cool. I'm into it. But the fact that they made him Khan was like, okay, cool. You're telling me this pasty British dude is named
Khan? No, it's very controversial. But I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on it.
Everyone else in that movie is great. And I love Benedict Cumberbatch. It's not against him. It literally is the fact that they whitewashed Khan and then tried to convince everyone that it wasn't Khan.
So do you want to guess the original name of Regarding Henry?
Asshole Ford.
Wow.
That move, he literally is an asshole, and you're supposed to feel bad for him.
Well, that's interesting because something that JJ said was hard plotting it is he felt like Henry was the villain.
He is.
And so he had to write a story in which the villain becomes the hero.
He's not a hero. He literally has something terrible happen to him, and then he's like, nah, I'm a good guy. No, that's not how life works. You don't get to just suddenly become a good guy because you get shot in the head. And literally have, like, the mental capacity of a child because you're shot in the head.
Let's put a pin in that because I definitely want to talk about that. But this is something that I think is interesting looking at talking about motifs and something that some people just have, like, concepts or ideas that sort of plague them that they like to write about. So this was really interesting. This was a quote from The Time that I think sort of fits into Star Wars, maybe. In plotting it, I had to figure out how to make it work dramatically for the villain to actually become the hero. But I love that thought that you can do something wrong and then years later you can go act, you can go back and make it right like Henry does. There's something I do believe. There is hope for even the smallest regrets. So I just found that interesting.
I'm just staring at the fridge because he's a moron. He literally
You mean Henry, not JJ, right?
No, JJ. He, like, made this.
I think this is an interesting concept that he's interested in.
It's an interesting concept, but he doesn't do it in that movie. It's an interesting concept if you execute it in the right way.
Sure.
This movie literally makes the guy get shot in the head and be reduced to, like, a third grader's capability to, like, think and act and do things. And then suddenly he's a good guy. And it's like, well, yeah, because it's like he's in the third grade because he was shot in the head. And it's like, okay, take that concept and do it with someone who is, like, a perfectly normal person, nothing happens to them, and they, like, kind of like how Scrooge does. Like,
sure,
the movie,
yeah.
Scrooge, where he's an asshole the whole time.
But you can see how this idea may have sparked it, and this is the first screenplay he ever wrote, and then it just seemed like, oh, this is something that has been of interest to him for a long time.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, I totally think that's fine.
Out, yeah.
I think it's just a poor execution in Regarding Henry.
Well, he actually had another movie come out first, which is interesting. It's just that this was the first one he sold. It was called Taking Care of Business, which I've seen, I think even in the theaters. And what's interesting about that movie, it's about a guy who loses his file of fax, and so this could never happen today. I guess unless he lost his phone, but he loses his file of fax and some stranger finds it and gets to pretend to be him because he has his life in this file of fax. Such a 90s movie. And then he was...
I just literally shook my head.
Yeah. And then he was listed as J.J. Abrams. He was not listed as J.J. until Armageddon, which was in 98. But
hell yeah, Armageddon.
But Forever
Young... That was when he was finally a good writer, was Armageddon.
Forever Young is a great movie. I didn't realize he wrote it. It's Mel Gibson, and it's about this 1940s... at least I think that's the movie. 1940s...
Oh, right. This is when we still liked Mel Gibson.
Yes. This is back when we liked Mel Gibson.
Before he made terrible, terrible movies like Hacksaw Ridge that got nominated for fucking Oscars for no reason.
That's not why I don't like Mel Gibson.
No, I'm aware why people don't like Mel Gibson. I'm just saying, now we're giving him a redemption arc for a fucking terrible movie.
I should be clear. He doesn't seem to like me. Just saying.
Jews!
What? Who? Where?
Who? The Jews?
Anyway, let's get off JJ. I just thought that was interesting because it does fit into a lot of, you know, what we do here. Harrison was a little reluctant to take the role in the sense that he was going to be playing two lawyers back to back. because we just did Presumed Innocent.
Right. A while ago. I was like, I can't remember what happened.
It was such a long time ago.
I was like, what movie?
About a month ago.
I thought you meant we're filming two today because I'm going away to Floride. And so I thought you meant Jack Ryan. I was like, honey, I don't know what movie you were watching, but that is not a lawyer.
Well, we'll get into that because there's another reason why he did take that. He didn't want it to be like Big, even though he did sort of, you know, he turned down Big, and but he didn't want him to be like a child. But he does come across like a child.
Because he was shot in the head by John Leguizamo.
I know, and I was thinking, oh, this must have been John Leguizamo's first movie.
It is Annette Bening. Okay.
Yes, oh God, Annette Bening. So you want to talk about the actors? We can skip ahead a little bit. Okay.
I couldn't remember if it was Annette Bening or if that was another movie. Because, guys, I watched this movie once and I wasn't watching it again. And so I couldn't remember.
Because I'm more of a fan of it than you are.
Yeah, it's fine. There's so many movies, like the 90s era, other than Air Force One, for Harrison Ford, I'm like, it's fine.
He's not this movie, but we're getting into the, you know, my family, have you done? Ah,
again,
point finger at you.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the next episode. But literally, there is a scene in fucking Jack Ryan where he literally doesn't speak. He just goes,
no, save it.
He points his finger and walks away. We'll talk about it. Yeah. But it's like,
I particularly in my notes wrote, only points finger, says nothing.
Yeah, he literally, and I was on the train and I was
like, is this a record?
Busted out laughing.
This is a record.
Like, he literally just was like, and walks away. And I was like, all right, dude. But I don't know.
Okay,
so. I think he gave up until Air Force One.
Well, listen, okay, so this is what he
actually,
said.
Actually, I don't know.
Film. This is what he felt. And you know, things change.
Oh, wait.
What?
What year is this?
This is 91, so he was filming it in 90.
Oh, then why did we do? What year is
what?
Is the Jack Ryan movie?
92.
My phone says 98. I was very confused because I went, how is this next? Because Patriot Games in my phone said it was 98. And I was like, we are missing Air Force One.
No, we're not.
That's why I was like 96 was Air Force One. Because I was, oh no, 97. Check. Because, guys, we might be way off. But.
No, I've been looking at this movie like.
Because my phone said it was 98.
I'm only looking it up to prove you.
You can prove Apple wrong. It's not me. I was like.
Patriot Games.
It is.
1992.
Hold on. Let me.
I think you found another movie called Patriot Games.
No, I watched this fucking shit show of a movie. Trust me, it was a shit show.
Anyway, while you're looking for that, I'm going to talk about what Harrison felt about the script. It's not what you see in a script that attracts you, but what you feel in it. I felt a very strong emotional response to the dilemma this guy goes through. It was a very positive emotional response to his struggles and his successes. So he felt a personal connection to this. That's so wrong.
This is 1998.
Not when it came out.
I saw that and I was like, how are we skipping all of the 90s?
Dear Apple, you are way, way incorrect. Screen cap that. We're gonna put
I
that
did.
Online.
But I was like, this is insane because we're missing so many movies in the 90s.
No.
I was like, we just started the 90s.
I'm surprised you didn't mention it before. Like, Lauren, I think your schedule's wrong.
Well, because I figured, I was like, because I remember, guys, so much info into the next episode, but we're doing an interview, and so I thought, oh, we must be recording it early because
that
you
makes
couldn't.
Sense. Gotcha.
And so then, but then I looked at the schedule, and I was like, no, this says it's next. But Apple was like, nope, that's the end of the 90s. But then I knew Clear and Present Danger was like 95.
Mm-hmm.
Apple!
Yeah, we'll look more into that for the next episode so we can scold them on Twitter.
Yep. Okay, continue.
Also, I have a quote here from Scott Rudin, the producer of it. He said, the script had an incredible humanity to it, and Harrison was the first actor I thought of for the role. He's one of the few actors I know who can pull it off, who could make you believe that he was both a shark lawyer and a diminished adult. That is true.
Yeah, he did fine. I just don't like this movie.
It's sort of, we're getting into sort of this sort of saccharine 90s. This
like it's such a 90s movie for a guy to be like an asshole turned good guy. Like, that was a 90s trope. Like, if you tried to pull that today, I'd be like, hi, no, I have the receipts. You were still a fucking asshole. Like, you can try and redeem yourself. Like, look at celebrities. Like, as much as I love Christian Bale, we still talk about how big of a fucking asshole he was on that movie set.
I couldn't believe how she was falling for him. Like, I get that she still had affection for him, and maybe it was reminding her of,
but
like...
he was a child.
He was a child. He was a child. Like, there's a reason he bonded with his daughter, because they were...
they were of the same mindset.
She was more mature than him, actually. Like, I remember loving this movie as a kid, and I still enjoyed watching it. But near the end of it, I did sort of question my biggest issue, even the love, the, you know, falling in love and, you know, all that stuff. Because Annette Bening's so wonderful. I'll talk about how much I love her. But when they brought him... okay, two things. When they brought him back to work, and when... he's in a room alone with Bruce for the first time after her friend, she's played by Robin Bartlett, Phyllis. Her friend Phyllis is like, don't tell anyone that this is what's happening to him. And she leaves him alone in a room with his ex-partner. Like, what conversation do you think they were going to have? Like, all of a sudden it's okay. And then they go to the, she brings him to the party. And then, yes, okay, he's at work because they want to be nice to him, but they let him in on meetings. I did. He it doesn't remember anything. He doesn't know how to be a lawyer.
Yeah. Real quick, guys. It's a little delayed, but I'm going to explain the plot of Regarding Henry.
Oh, I didn't think you'd remember. Go ahead.
No, I remember the plot because I hate this movie. So, Henry...
you hate it. That's so strong.
I very much dislike this movie.
Okay.
So, Henry is like a big shot lawyer. We watched it on Christmas.
Well, it does... the beginning is Christmas.
Christmas, yeah. It was on Christmas Day, and my mom's like, Harrison! I was like, no!
I love it. They're like, it's a Christmas movie! 2 seconds of the movie takes place on Christmas. Go
Welcome
ahead.
Welcome to Die Hard.
oh, but that entire movie takes place on Christmas. That
okay,
I get.
It is literally a Christmas movie. Anyway.
Many people would fight you that that is a Christmas movie, but go ahead. Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
Anyways.
It's a Christmas movie.
Listen. Anyways.
Says the Jew.
Yes, it's the Jew. What do you know about Christmas? So, Regarding Henry is about Annette Bening and Harrison Ford, who are married to each other. Harrison Ford is like a big shot lawyer and a fucking asshole, yells at his daughter in the opening scene.
Let's not forget the slicked back hair means he's an asshole.
Yeah, slicked back hair, you're a fucking douche. So he, like, his hair is slicked back, he's a piece of shit lawyer, thinks he's hot shit, yells at his daughter, like screams at her in the beginning, and you're like, wow, this man is a piece of shit. So then he's like, I'm getting a cigarette. So he goes out to the store. Meanwhile, John Leguizamo is there and is like, I'm robbing the place, and shoots him in the head, and he survives. First of all, kill the bastard. He's a piece of shit.
Shot him twice.
Shot him twice, and he fucking lived. Anyway, he survives, but he has like the mental capacity of a third grader. And so they're like nursing him back to health, but he's not all mentally there.
So pretty much is the shot in the head didn't do anything. That's the ironic part.
It just fucking turned him into a child.
No, it didn't. That's the interesting part that I had forgotten about watching it, is that so he gets shot in the shoulder, and it's so much blood loss that by the time he gets to the hospital, the lack of oxygen to his brain caused him to have mental deficiency.
It's just dumb. Like, that's... okay. So then he turns into a vegetable... it's like a...
not a vegetable.
Whatever he is. And then he... God, I hate this. So he, like, doesn't turn into a vegetable. He literally just is, like, reverted to being a child, basically. Everyone needs to help him learn how to walk.
And talk and read.
Which I... okay. I guess it's because he, like, the lack of oxygen, but I don't understand why he needs physical therapy to walk. He can physically walk. It is.
So what happens is that it's like if you have a stroke or like certain areas of the brain.
Yeah, but like my grandma has to go to physical therapy for her back. But it's not like, because you have to reteach yourself how to do it. But the way this movie shows it is
it's real. That's what happens.
I guess. I don't know.
Your brain controls a lot of the stuff that happens with your body. In fact, he even walks. He still walks a little limp and he can't really use one of his arms very well. But it's the same thing that would happen to a stroke victim. Now, that's something that I can actually talk about, because Harrison and Bill Nunn, who played, his physical therapist, Bradley, they did a lot of research. They talked with speech therapists and occupational therapists and neurosurgeons. So there was a lot of research that was put into it. So it's very accurate. And from what I understand from my own sort of, you know, watching of things, and my grandmother had a stroke, like, that does happen. Like, your brain affects very small little things. Sometimes it can be the whole side of your body. Sometimes it can be just certain things. And so what the physical therapy does is it gets those sort of, you know, muscles working again, and hopefully the neurons will start to, you know, hit. I mean, I'm using probably layman terms, but but this is something interesting that Harrison said about research, which I think you will find funny, or maybe you will just laugh at in an unfunny way. Is it's like playing Jesus without reading the Bible. And she has her hands in her face. I knew that would do that.
That's why I bring these quotes.
I bring these quotes to get a reaction out of you because it's entertaining.
Guys, okay, so basically, Annette Bening starts falling in love with child Harrison Ford. And then you come to find out they were both cheating on each other. And then you're supposed to feel bad for these assholes. And you don't. That's what I got out of Regarding Henry. You know who I felt bad for? Rachel. The child.
Their daughter. Not Rachel, the person right here in front of us.
No, Rachel the child, who literally was screamed at, ignored.
Rachel, the point is, if you can't be responsible, don't take food out of the kitchen.
And then you're supposed to feel bad that her dad and mom were assholes.
I thought Annette Bening's character was not an asshole.
She cheated on him.
She did. But he was an asshole.
And they were both assholes.
It was very brief. And the idea was that they were having this sort of cold, you know, we're married and we're just rich people who have money and we're not in a connection. He was a terrible person.
He was. I guess my problem is there's just a lot of different ways you can go about that.
It's very fair. It's very fairy tale like.
It's very much a 90s movie.
90s fairy tale, yes. No, it felt very 90s. But the music is so 80s. That was sort of interesting because it's the beginning of the decade. Yeah, exactly. So I found that fascinating.
That's like, it's funny because I look back on things my mom dressed me in because I was born in 91.
Yeah.
I'm a baby.
You're a baby.
And I look at things my mom dressed me in, and I was like, oh, wow, the 80s were still very prevalent at this time. Because there's, like, I'm in, like, this weird colored thing. And I was like, oh, yeah, it was clearly 92. Like, I was like, it's very clear that it was still close.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are things you don't realize when you're a kid. Like, you know, for me, it was the 80s, but my wallpaper was still 70s. Like, things that, like, carry over. Or, like, when Mad Men started to get to 1970, I started freaking out because a lot of the furniture reminded me of my grandfather's house. And I was like, oh my God, this stuff is from the 60s. Oh, of course it was. He just didn't get rid of it. But like all of a sudden I started recognizing stuff and I thought, this is way long before I was born. What is happening? It was really interesting. Things you don't realize when you're a kid.
Well, yeah, like
yeah,
watching these 90s movies, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember people dressed like that. I remember this. I remember that because it's...
Well, something really sort of weird is that most of this movie takes place near where I work.
Oh, because it's what?
It's near museum. It's near Museum Row.
Doesn't he get lost in the Met at one point?
He doesn't, and I was surprised they didn't do that. When he leaves the house, he crosses the street and he's in front of the Met.
I mean, he gets lost and ends up at like. Oh, I don't.
Yeah. So Museum Row is this sort of stretch of Fifth Avenue where there are tons of museums, and they happen to be right in front of the Met. So I walk like around that area.
It's like the Met. If you go down a little bit further, it's MoMA. They're like, all the museums are in the same general, other than the Guggenheim is in like fucking Timbuktu.
No, Guggenheim is not that far. But anyway, it's on my way to walk.
The Whitney is the one that's really...
Well, they moved the Whitney.
Yeah, the Whitney used to be over there, but now it's not anymore.
Yeah.
Now it's in Timbuktu.
It is in Timbuktu, yeah.
I was like, there is one that is nowhere near anything. The Whitney, you have to take like a boat.
But they use a lot of locations. Like I was actually surprised when I did find out that the apartment and the clinic is actually a set. That's in L.A. And that the Tony Walton, the Tony winning.
Why do people do that?
Because it in the 90s, I don't think there was a large, there probably were not as many large scale studios. There was probably just two. Now New York is known for
filming. I literally live by one.
Yeah.
There's a movie studio right there.
I used to live by one in Queens. Like there probably just wasn't the capacity. It was probably cheaper to hire people. I mean, I don't know a lot about the 90s, you know, entertainment economy, but New York wasn't really as known for that. But I was surprised. It's so, like, it feels like such a New York movie. And I guess Harrison lived there at the time. Mike Nichols, the director, lived there. But there's the Met. There's the New York Library. There's the Plaza Hotel, the Oak Room, where Bruce and the girl, woman he's having an affair with.
Why are they trying to close the Plaza? Whatever happened?
I believe it became like condominiums and stuff. Like, it's still open, but it's not.
It's not the Plaza.
It's not like a hotel. Honestly, that's something I didn't do research on. And I don't remember.
I also, every time I think about them, like something. The Ritz.
Something that a lot of our listeners may know is that in front of the Plaza is actually where that sort of famous Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, mm-hmm. she hits him with the bag, he's wearing a hat, photo shoot was taken. And then on the other side of that is now the spot of an Apple store.
So that's where that is?
So I'm looking out the window of the scene and I'm like, hey, there's an Apple store there now. Just sort of taking over the view.
Boy,
Times Square. And also, you know, most movies that you watch, if you're from New York, you can see they sort of cheat it. You'll watch it and you'll go, oh, that's not around that corner, or they faked it. But this is pretty like when I was a kid, I visited a really distant cousin, and I remember being really excited because they said, the convenience store on the corner is where Harrison Ford was shot in Regarding Henry. And I asked my mother, I was like, where did cousin Linda live? And she's like, oh, it was around this street. And I was like, oh, that's nearby. And I looked it up and it's actually the candy store. It's a candy store. It's not there anymore. But it was still nearby. Like, it was plausible that he would have walked, you know, from that location in front of the Met to buy cigarettes. And usually you don't get that accuracy.
Yeah, because it's interesting. Like, I think it's funny watching movies based in New York now living here. And same,
it's very different.
Same with
yeah.
LA. Like, I'm sure people who watched Hell or High Water was like, oh, well, this isn't Texas, this is New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for me, watching movies based in L.A. and seeing how far people seem to travel in, like, 10 minutes, I'm like, you guys are out of your mind.
Yeah.
Like, La La Land, especially, like, they were on, like, Hollywood Boulevard, and the next they're in the movie theater that's, like, down by Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ain't no way you got there quickly. So
this surprised me how, like, I was like, wow, this is really, really pretty good. The only thing is he walked really far when he went away. Like,
I mean,
he walks to Times Square from 81st Street and Fifth Avenue.
That's terrible. That's like 3 miles.
Yeah, but the park's in the way. And I'm just saying that he walked a very long way when he got lost.
Yeah, it was like three. Yeah, it's about 3 miles because every 20 blocks is a mile. But,
so this
guys.
So this is the second time that he worked with Mike Nichols.
The first month.
I'm finding,
which is now on Netflix because the world hates us.
It's been on Netflix for a while, at least in the U.S. I don't know about anywhere
else. I typed in Harrison Ford.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that he seems to work with the same director twice, and then that's it. Like, if he works with someone a second time, there's no third that I'm finding so far. So these are the two movies.
The exception of Spielberg.
That's true. Non-franchise movies. I should take that back. Non-franchise movies. Because that sort of is its own thing, because they come as a package, I feel like. But the same sort of people came on. Julia Taylor was the casting director. Anne Roth, who we talked about with Working Girl, was the costumes, is a very famous costume designer. And in between this, they had become very good friends. And as we mentioned in Working Girl, is a lot of people felt like, oh, they have very similar, like, temperaments. It just comes out in different ways. They also have very similar ethnic backgrounds. I've mentioned Mike Nichols is one of my favorite directors. He passed away in 2014, unfortunately. And there's this really awesome bench in Central Park that's dedicated to him near the Met. Because it's on the it's on the other side of the park by the Met, but it's on the walkway to the Shakespeare in the Park, the Delacorte Theater, and he did a lot of stuff there. So
I was like, I'm never over there enough because I'm afraid of him.
I was never up there until I got a job in a museum. So
I'm always in like Soho, Chelsea.
So it was just weird at watching this movie going, this is my commute.
Well, it's like, I don't know, New York movies freak me out. Like, I was watching, what is that movie? Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist with my dad. And every time they were somewhere, I'm like, they went from Union Square to Brooklyn Bowl in 10 minutes. Nice try. In a car in Manhattan. I was like, y'all are fucking insane if you think that happened.
So should we talk about the actors? We sort of didn't talk about the actors like we said we would.
What? Looking at Bening and stuff? We did.
Not really. I mean, we just mentioned her name. We can go back to her. I literally love Annette Bening. She's one of my favorite actresses. And this is sort of the year that she really exploded.
Guys, 20th Century Women.
Mwah. Oh, I can't. I haven't been able to see it yet.
My mom hated it, and it was funny because I had called her sobbing after watching that movie. Because it's not sad. It's just one of those movies where you're just like, I want to call my mom. And I called my mom, and she was like, I fell asleep. I was like, oh, cool. Thanks, Mom.
But this is around the time that, no, I didn't realize her first movie is actually The Great Outdoors, which is a movie I loved as a kid. I didn't even realize that was her. She plays like this very New York, a little, not maybe she's not New York, but she's very obnoxious, like John Candy's wife. It's Dan Aykroyd. I love this movie. It's really good. But that was 89. And then she did sort of the small part in Postcards from the Edge, which was directed by Mike Nichols, which is how they got connected. She was the so in Postcards from the Edge, she's the actress who's dating the guy that she thinks is her boyfriend, but he's just sleeping with her.
You mean Dennis Quaid?
Yes.
I don't remember her.
So she had a small part in that.
I did watch that for the first time right after Carrie Fisher died, mm-hmm. So I don't remember much about that
movie. And then that same year, she was nominated for an Oscar for The Grifters, and that was sort of like her big breakthrough. She'd been a theater actress. And then I always remember her from Bugsy. That was my first big impression was Bugsy, which came out in 91. And that's where she met Warren Beatty, which then became her husband.
I guess the first thing I remember her from was American Beauty, and then I went.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Again, I'm a baby.
You are, and that's okay. Mickey Allen played Rachel Turner. She's retired from acting. Bill Nunn, who played Bradley, we talked about, he died last year, unfortunately. He did a lot of Spike Lee movies. It was in Sister Act, Runaway Jury. Bruce Altman is interesting, who actually plays Bruce. I was thinking, oh, God, this must be a million of movies he's done, because I always think of him as that guy. Like, oh, like I saw him once in a rehearsal hall, and I was like, oh, he's that guy. I couldn't even think of his name. But this is actually his first movie. And the next year, he was in Glengarry Glen Ross. He was in Quiz Show, The Paper.
Sorry, I hate Mammoth. I just have a guttural
reaction. I'm not a big fan of Mammoth, but it's a very famous movie.
Alec Baldwin was nominated for an Oscar for it, wasn't he?
I don't know, maybe.
I think he was nominated for Glengarry Glen Ross.
And eventually he's in Morning Glory, which we'll get to, which is another Harrison Ford movie. And he's that guy, he's in Damages.
He literally only works with Alec Baldwin and or Harrison Ford.
You should actually see, you should see his reel. His reel is just him talking to celebrities. It's just like, oh, this is okay.
Because it's Glengarry Glen Ross, which is Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
And then it's Complicated, which is Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
And then it is this movie, Regarding Henry, and then Morning Glory. Yeah,
he's in Game Change on HBO. He was in Mr. Robot. This is just a spattering of what he's done. Elizabeth Wilson, who plays his secretary, is Roz from 9 to 5.
I've never seen 9 to 5.
Oh, my God, you would love 9 to 5. You got to see 9 to 5.
Yeah, I know.
Lily Tomlin is fantastic in it. We talked about John Leguizamo. Robin Bartlett.
Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. We talked about Robin Bartlett, who played Phyllis, and she was Paul's sister in Mad About You. I don't know if people are a big
fan
of that.
Yeah, but
she was the rich
inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, she was, remember the house that they go to and they lose the cat and she
freaks out. Oh, that old lady?
Yeah, she's the wife. She freaks out. She looks so different, but she obviously a lot of time has passed.
Yeah, okay. All right.
But she's done tons of stuff. She was in a show that I love that was on for like one season called The Powers That Be.
Why does it just say Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Oh, so this show called The Powers That Be that she was in that no one knows about, it's like on YouTube now, it had David Hyde Pierce in it. It was Joseph Gordon-Levitt's first like big acting role. It was a TV series.
That's right, I forgot he was TV before anything else because he was Third Rock from the Sun.
This was before Third Rock from the Sun. It had David Hyde Pierce in it before Frasier. And I loved the show and it got canceled. It got moved to USA and it was like, why do I know this woman? And I was like, oh, that's right. She was in this thing that I loved. So she's another face from the 80s and the 90s that people might know. And Donald Moffat, who plays the boss Charlie, he's actually the president in Clear and Present Danger. Eventually we'll get to. He played a lot of presidents. He's played lots of fake presidents. He was CJ's dad in West Wing in one episode. So it's got a really great cast. Oh, and J.J. Abrams has a cameo.
J.J. Jeffrey.
Hi, Mr. Turner.
Oh, God.
He's a bag boy. He, like, drops off
remember
stuff.
Remember when we met that crazy guy? J.J. Abrams.
How many? We met a lot of crazy guys.
I mean, the guy who literally came in a cape and stole my question from me.
That's your story. I didn't meet him.
Did we talk about that on here?
probably.
The crazy guy who seemed normal and then stood up with a cape and lost his damn mind.
Listen, everybody expresses their joy in their own way.
Yeah, when you come in a cape.
Oh my God, you just spit on me.
Sorry. I literally had a question about Star Trek. No, I had a question about Henry. Henry was going
to
come.
We very briefly met J.J. Abrams at the Tribeca Film Festival. We went to a panel.
And I literally was like, I like your movie. It was a great moment.
And I got almost trampled by people, and I went, not worth it! Not worth it! And just like ran off. I was like, please don't touch me. This is just a human being. It does not matter. I will walk away. Don't kill me.
I got my phone case signed, but then I literally I say stupid shit. In those moments, like, my brain short circuits and is like, what is the dumbest thing you can possibly say? So I probably was like, yeah, Chris Pine's better Kirk than Shatner.
So this seems like a good time to take a break to introduce our sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
So we are lucky enough to have...
I don't know why I nodded.
Why'd you laugh? Oh.
Because I went, mm-hmm.
We went, mm-hmm. That's a nod. It's a nod. So we are so happy to welcome Haas Urban, which is a skincare line, as our sponsor, our main sponsor for the show. They have amazing things that are all natural products. That's why I really love them. They originally produced for actors, but what's great for everyone is that it's really natural products that help take off, you know, makeup and help moisturize, because a lot of actors, the idea behind it was, you know, they put on so much makeup all the time. They're out in the elements. The idea is that what I love is they're non-toxic, just like people. You want your products non-toxic. And anyway, I think it's really funny. My favorite is the Sangria Lip Balm, or Lip Glide, as it's called. And we just got you some products. You're going to try them.
I'm going to try them. I think as soon as Lauren leaves, I'm going to take a bath with my muscle-relaxing bath salts. Don't eat the bath.
I also use Wisteria. There's this beautiful lavender moisturizer. There's serums. So you need to go to HaasUrban.com, and you will smell amazing, and your skin will feel great.
Your lips will be moist.
So moist. And if you use the wonderful code Ford, isn't that creative? Oh, my God. Ford. You will be able to get a discount off your first order.
Oh, yeah.
HaasUrban.com. So that's HaasUrban.com.
Try it out.
Please do.
Sorry, my voice cracked.
It's okay. Now back to the show.
Back to the show. Well, we're almost done. We're going to talk about some news.
Oh, wait. And let me... I have some stuff to talk about, though, real quick.
For what?
After the movie. Made $43 million. It did get negative reviews. Harrison Ford was infuriated by the Mike Nichols criticism. Some critics felt, I guess, that it wasn't as depth as his other. And then also in that year, November 1990, News of the World had to write a written apology that they had stated that he had behaved badly on the set of The Last Crusade after a court hearing. The premiere party was at the Rainbow Room at 30 Rock, so it was a very New York thing. And it just seems to me like the reason he did this movie was Harrison Ford had come sort of into a point in his life where he realized that work wasn't as important as his family. And so he liked the idea that here was a character who had discovered that family was more important than his job.
Yeah, but
that's sort of interesting in the development of him as an actor and a person.
Yeah.
But you were saying, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say news.
Oh, yeah, talk about news. Harrison is being honored again.
Yeah. So Harrison Ford will be this year's honoree for the Celebrity Fight Night. It is benefiting the Muhammad Ali Parkinson Center at the Barrow Neurological Institute in Phoenix, which I'm assuming it's because of his work for his daughter.
I think so, yeah. They didn't actually say it exactly. But
they didn't say it, but it's
But he's a humanitarian in general, as we've discussed.
Neurological things, and his daughter does have epilepsy, so I'm assuming it is, you know, for his work for epilepsy. He was just honored here as well. But it is going to be held Saturday, March 18th at the J.W. Marriott Dessert. Marriott, God, Jesus.
You have my disease now.
No. No, that says desert. I just can't read.
I literally... Okay.
I was like, did you put desert? No, you put desert.
I wouldn't put it past me, but I copy and pasted this from the article.
Marriott Desert Resort Ridge... God. Guys, hold on. JW Marriott Desert Ridge Resort and Spa. Not my fault that this has like 20 names. But yeah.
It's his fault for being honored.
It's his fault. But yeah, I mean, that's awesome. It's the 23rd year of it. And it's honoring leaderships in sports, entertainment, and business communities.
Yay.
But this will be the first year that Muhammad Ali isn't there.
Yes. Well. Anyway.
on that note.
Yes, on that note. But we want to remind you to enter our contests. We have mm-hmm. contests online just for, you know, following us on all social media, yeah. answering questions, retweeting. But the big contest that we have is after each episode, you can go on our website under contests, go seasonal contest. We're in the sort of winter-spring contest going on right now, so yeah. a little bit of a mashup. Answer a trivia question from the episode showing that you listened. For every social media that you follow, you get an extra entry. If you wrote us a review, in April, we're going to read our new reviews. We haven't had a chance to do that, but we're going to read the new reviews on the air as well, so we can do that, unless you don't want us to. You don't have to. The prizes is actually pick a prize this time. So there's something for everybody. You can pick an amazing vintage original poster of Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is super awesome. You can get a Indiana Jones prize pack, which has Indiana Jones stickers for your computer, as well as a Last Crusade notebook. Mm-hmm. You can get, for the Star Wars fan in you, we have a Star Wars ring of Han Solo in carbonite.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool, actually. Shehan makes them herself. It's from Etsy.
Nice.
Yeah. And then a Carrie Fisher prize pack, which has everything from a Princess Diaries pin, Coca-Cola lip balm. We have stickers for your computer of Leia with the word hope, of Harrison Ford, mm-hmm. and a Billy Lord. Mm-hmm. And some cool eyeshadow with some glitter in it. So this time, whoever wins. Lately, it's always been people who enter the most. So after the next episode gets, you know, online, the question from the previous episode will be gone, which means you've lost another chance to get all those entries. And so far, people who've entered the most have, of course, won.
Yeah.
From just, you know, process of elimination.
You know, yeah, like probability.
Yeah. If you want to take a look on our website of all the other prizes that we will be giving away through these contests and through online by following us on Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We are on everything but Twitter at the Fordcast Podcast, and we are on Twitter at the Fordcast PC. You can find Rachel at
Rachel Leishman. You can also check me out on Culturist, Wizards and Whatnot, Doctor Who Watch, and Pop Wrapped.
Ooh. You can find me on Twitter right now at Lauren Milberger, LauRenMilberger. You can find us at theforecastpodcast.com, where you can see, as I mentioned, our sponsors. And you can see our sponsors for all the contests. You can go to the archives and back up the episodes that you have not heard yet. I meant to say go back, not back up.
Back us up.
Yeah, please. If you can also donate to the Fordcast to help the show going. That's how we keep going.
Mm-hmm.
With your help.
Yep.
It's tax deductible.
Rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, call your mom.
Recommend
call
us.
Call your mom even if you don't want to do any of those things.
Your mom probably likes Harrison Ford.
That's
debatable.
Projecting.
I know. I'm just trying to be funny. Oh, and I want to add that I realized that I said incorrectly for Haas Urban. It's jasmine and wisteria that is the moisturizer that I like.
Ooh.
Not lavender. That was a mistake. It's called Wisteria Lane. Get it? Wisteria Lane.
Yes.
Yeah.
For those Desperate Housewife fans out there.
HaasUrban.com.
Okay. Next week. We have
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Oh, you're doing my thing.
My brain. We're going to be having a special episode with Stephen Kent from Beltway Banthas.
Oh, yeah, Beltway Banthas.
He is going to be talking with us about the Patriot Games.
We kind of, you know, gave that away before. But yes, Patriot Games 1992, not 1998.
Yeah, iTunes.
And it's not the Patriot Games, it's Patriot Games.
I know.
Sort of my pet peeve.
The sentence I was saying needed the in front of it.
I hate when people say the Titanic. It's Titanic.
okay, that's weird. You must have been in Hannah's mind when I said the Titanic this week and she lost her damn mind.
When people put those in front of movies that don't have them,
I was like, well, okay.
Pisses me off. It's Titanic. I'm that way
about certain other, like, movies I'm not that big about, but, like, certain things I'm like, no, that is not what it is. I'm that way about names. If you missay names, I'm like, no. Anyways, guys.
Thanks so much for listening. Write us a review.
Yep, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.